but we were able to build up stock, which we've never been able to do. Of course, by October, that was pretty much gone.
Wow.
You know, and then, so right now we're not mass producing like we used to.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost just making stuff to order now.
Yeah.
Kind of like the old days, like 16, 17 years ago.
Yeah.
What we used to do. Cause I mean, our crew is really small. We've hired other people, but I mean, we used to have 30 guys in the back, not including the people that work from home who sewed mallets and everything.
Right.
So it was almost with just the manufacturing people, it was almost like 50 people. Now it's only like maybe nine guys back there. Yeah. So I, and I pitch in the back.
Yeah. You've mentioned that in our conversation. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Are you wrapping mallets? Are you doing?
I am wrapping mallets.
Yeah.
I'm one of only two people that know how still here. I mean, Eric Johnson knows how.
Yeah.
But it's still, he's like, it takes him a while to get into a rhythm.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I just remember the process because that's how I started.
I was going to ask you, how did you get started? Just out of curiosity, because when I met you, I guess it was at NAMM. But I've also, you know, we also in the German community, we see you around, right? We see you around like IP stuff. But, you know, in the back of my mind, I was like, I wonder how he got started there. So what is that story?
Surprisingly, I was a touring musician for a real long time. Not a lot of people know, especially in the drumming community, unless you're friends with me on like social media, didn't know I was a touring bass player for years.
I've seen the pictures on your Facebook. I was like, yeah, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It was, you know, back in the day, I mean, all I wanted to do, I was listening to rock music. My brother and I were both listening to rock music. And we're like, man, we want to play guitar. So that's how we started. Brother and I, actually, even further back, my mom was a piano player.
Oh,
so
okay.
She taught us how to play. So my brother definitely, he's a year older than me. His skill set, he got there way faster than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, one hand, I was like, yeah, man, this is awesome.
Yeah,
two hand,
yeah.
I was like, and then
I don't
we,
want a bass line, are you kidding me?
Yeah, yeah. And then we just learned how to play guitar and really gravitated to guitar. And then I got really gypped on learning how to play. I was learning how to play tablature, but my brother was learning how to read music.
Mm-hmm.
And then middle school and all this stuff, he started to play saxophone. I played sports, but still dabbled in guitar,
uh-huh.
Then got in a drum line. Like he got in a drum line right into high school. And I was like, what is this? You know, I still like playing basketball. I still love playing sports. Then I blew out a knee.
Oh man.
Yeah. And then, oh, what did I do? Then I joined drumline.
Don't worry. You know? We're just going to crab step on your broken knee. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I actually dislocated my knee twice.
Oh man.
And it was just cartilage that was starting to build up. And then of course, yeah. As soon as I healed up, I was like, hey, let me go ahead and play drums. And I actually
wear a drum.
Yeah. I actually didn't even know how to read music yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already playing bass drum. And then my freshman year, while I was already doing the marching band thing, I started taking, you know, band class. But then the same year I was like, guitar is not for me. My hands are just, I can't multitask this so much.
Yeah.
I picked up bass. So the natural progression of me playing drums and bass kind of just kept equal.
Yeah.
You know, it just started to rise equally. And I just kept that going. So fast forward through, you know, college and all that stuff. I was off the road, and I was actually a stock boy working at the Gap. and then I was bartending at a Thai restaurant. The vice president of Innovative Percussion. Hold on 1 second. Sorry.
You're good. You're good.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm on the podcast.
Okay.
Sorry.
No worries.
All right. I knew that was going to happen.
You're a man of in great need over there.
So the vice president and his wife, who I both went to high school with. I went to Father Ryan High School back in the day.
Where is that again?
That's in Nashville.
That's right.
Nashville,
that's
Tennessee. Right. They are pretty well known in the, I don't know nowadays, but they were one of the innovators and beginners of the indoor activity.
I was about to say that's why that name rings a bell, because of when you think of like early indoor, you think of Brian Mason, you think of like those early on kind of pushers for it, but also those early programs. I actually think UNLV had an indoor drum line back in the 90s or so.
They did. It was like them and Penn State. They all had indoor groups back in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
So I was one of the first members of Father Ryan High School that actually did WGI.
Wow.
Yeah. That's so incredible. Anyways, the vice president, Chris Long, and his wife walk in to the Gap while I'm stacking clothes from the shipment, you know, and stocking the floor. And he was like, dude, what are you doing here? And I was like, man, I'm just waiting for the next tour. I'm also teaching and like, you know, being the broke musician, touring musician as Nashville and any kind of industry or city you live in, working odd jobs. He goes, dude, why don't you apply for a manufacturing gig? You know, it's more consistent work. And then when you find the next gig, see if you can just go down to part-time and do all this stuff. So I applied. And of course, Eric Johnson also knew me from being a kid locally, you know, marching drumline and doing the drum corps thing. And he was like, dude, you're perfect for it. Let's get you started. So, and that was in 2004.
At that point, IP had been around for about 10, 12 years or so.
Almost 10 years.
Yeah, almost 10.
Almost 10 years during the, at that point. So I just started manufacturing. I just started learning how to build all the sticks and mallets and stuff and how the pairing process goes and all that. And then within a year and a half, I was a supervisor of the warehouse.
Wow.
And that lasted for another year or so. And then they went through an artist rep, and then she ended up leaving. And then they had a drum set artist rep, and he ended up leaving and moving to LA. He actually plays with Moby now.
Oh, wow.
Really? Yeah. Well, I don't know how much Moby actually does, but I know he's played with Moby.
Wow.
And so when that position became open, they actually came up to me and said, hey man, what did you go to school for? And I said, well, I have a double degree in marketing and public relations and a minor in percussion. And they go, why didn't we know that? I go,
well, yeah. Well, why didn't I know that? Where's that from?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I went for a PR degree in mass comm. I knew I didn't want to be a band director.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was, this is going to be my fallback plan if I can't be a rock star.
Yeah, smart. Yeah.
and also to make my parents proud, you know, like, yeah. Hey, you know, you need a fallback plan, you know? And I said, okay. And then realized, after I got my PR degree in mass comm, I only needed to take another semester of school to get my marketing degree. And so I said, why not one more semester? I mean, I was already there for long enough.
Yeah.
So did that. And then as soon as they found that out, they were like, you're hired. So initially I was actually the drum set rep to start.
Oh yeah. Okay. I didn't know that. How many were on the roster at that point?
Not a lot. Yeah. Like we had more of the jazz, more of the educator drum set kind of guys,
mm-hmm.
less on the, hey, playing arenas and, and all that, and more, less in the pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then because of my local, and I can't say influence, but because a lot of the locals in Nashville knew who I was, it kind of legitimized, oh man, this guy, he's an artist rep now. Let's start, you know, moving and shaking. And so we were able to get a good basis of artists in town.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hired, then they realized, well, man, you're not only this, but you're educational too. So it slowly migrated less drum set or on a national level to staying remotely in Nashville locally,
mm-hmm.
drum set, and then pretty much put more eggs in the basket of the educational market.
That's
where it still is.
Yeah, it still is today, right? So like, well, as in different, well, in normal times, you wouldn't be doing so much warehouse work, I'm sure, right? But like,
correct.
But I imagine that's actually kind of fun. I mean, I understand it probably gets busy, but like that, it would be interesting to learn how a mallet is wrapped and stuff like that. I have an idea of it, but I'm sure it's nothing close to what it actually is. So,
you know, doing all that for as long as I did, or really a short amount of time as I did, it made me become more diverse in our product. And let's say you had a product question, man, I am more capable of answering that question because of my knowledge of that. Before that, I was just like, man, I know what a marching snare stick is, a tenor stick and a bass drum mallet and the basic necessities for, you know, the marching activity, front ensemble stuff.
Right.
But because of all that, and of course the tutelage of Eric Johnson, just really digging deep and learning what mallet is for what, you know, genre or musical purpose, made me just proficient.
I agree. I mean, it's kind of like studying music. Right. I mean, the ins and outs of being surrounded by it every day in multiple facets, too. Right. Like playing in a rock band it kind of overlaps with playing in an orchestra. But I mean, there's some same concepts in there. But, you know, I mean, being proficient in both is something that I'm very thankful for, because if I didn't have all the experiences I had up until this point and had no knowledge of what there was even out there. I mean, you talk to a lot of high school kids, they're like, and they don't really necessarily know about options, right? As far as like implements go. And you're like, well, you know, I mean, this material's for this and this material's for that. It's like, well, I mean, we have three Marimba mounts over there. That's what we use. And it's like, all right, well, let's dive into the catalog here. And let's understand what these different materials do, because I mean, like you think of the Christopher Lamb series, right, where it's just like every mallet is for a specific purpose. I think having an example line like that is something that is both extremely useful for the player. I must say it's one of my favorite lines, and also educational, because, you know, reading those descriptions and product descriptions and asking people like yourself. It's also educational for the students, right? I mean, there's a lot of kids out there who don't really fully understand, like there are different mouths for different things, right? And they find out how much it costs, and you're like, well, that's the part of the gig, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's the one issue I've always had, especially in the gig I'm in here, mm-hmm. is the lack of knowledge every band director across the world has on percussion implements.
Yeah.
You know, I've actually done a couple of clinics, you know, and the first thing I say is raise your hand if you're actually a percussionist, and there's like maybe two or three, and then, okay, who's a wind player? And it's like 90% of, yeah. of the audience. And even going to like Midwest or, you know, down to Texas for the Texas Music Educators Association convention, like the percussion clinics aren't long enough.
Yeah. You like know, 45, 50 minutes maybe or something.
Yeah. And everybody you see in there is like, man, you might as well just press record, and then instead of trying to write down all the notes, because every mallet, every stick, there is a purpose for it. And you can't say, hey, I have this xylophone mallet, here's one mallet, you know. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't do that to a wind player, you know.
No, absolutely not.
Hey, you know, especially with affordability, it's like, hey, here's a cheap reed or here's a cheap mouthpiece.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't do that.
No, you wouldn't. There, I mean, when I was student teaching, especially, and understanding that realm of like, okay, reeds, sizes, and quality, it's like there's a few brands, right, that I feel like are in that realm, but it, I don't know. I think parents maybe too have a hard time understanding like what the purpose of this is for. I mean, look, I mean, I got a whole rack of mallets back here that, you know,
it looks nice by the way.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate it. That I, you know, there's a lot of them I haven't, there's some I haven't even used yet. And then there's some, you know, that I haven't used in a few years. And it's like, well, I'm going to use them at some point one day. And I don't think a lot of kids, well, for one thing, not every kid needs that many, but I think a band program would need, you know, quite a bit just to have at their usage. I think that would be extremely beneficial, especially with the programs that I've been at. I've been at great, you know, programs like Foothill, and you know, I've been at other programs that like just have, you know, no idea of how useful it could be to have all these different implements, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's always a start, but there should always be a natural progression. I always use that religiously, where it's like, you know, get this certain amount of mallet. It could be one series, you know, or a general hardness, you know, and then the next year invest in that. But there, you know, when it comes to that stuff, everybody's really more invested in the marching band side of things. Mm. You know, you go down to Texas, and that is a whole different world when it comes to percussion.
Different realm. Yep.
It is. Yeah. I mean, they start young, and I mean, they're really involved, and that's why that state in general, no matter what economic demographic it is, they're still getting better education than the rest of the country. Band directors still just have the lack of knowledge, and it's unfortunate. They have that lack of knowledge that this is what you should do, you know. But that's why every kid, percussionist anyways, gravitates a little bit more to the drum set side of things and the marching band side of things, because most of the time in a concert band setting, they're the wicked stepchild, you know. No wonder they get in trouble all the time. I used to get in trouble all the time.
Yeah, we're counting measures the whole time. Are you kidding me? And then we lose count, and then you miss your entrance. They're like, what are you doing back there? I'm like, we're playing cards, dude. Like, we've played like in 95 measures. Are you kidding me?
Right. Yeah.
So it's interesting, funny, actually, we were doing a recording at UNLV a couple of years ago, and a wind band recording, and I played every like 260 measures in this giant like Howard Hansen arrangement or arrangement. And man, even then it took me back to those days where I'm just like, dude, like I could seriously just like doze off right now, you know, or play Words with Friends or something. I don't know.
I mean, somebody should do a sleep app test on for percussionists in concert bands.
That's what I'm saying. And then, you know, and then you got the Bernie meme coming out where he's sitting behind a set of timpani. I thought I was like, that is so accurate. Yeah. And there's one thing I wish more people knew about that, you know?
Yeah. Man, I was one of those guys that always jumped on playing timpani because, you know, you didn't rest like a concert bass drum player,
right?
You know, but you didn't have to play as many notes as like a xylo player or whatever. And I was just not that kind of kid,
you know,
in high school. But
yeah, big into the tubs, huh? That's funny. I enjoy it too. Not sure about playing timpani solos anymore, but I do enjoy a good little timpani gig. It's something about it brings you back to like kind of like the roots of what we do almost. I enjoy it. It's one thing too. It's like that, and then you kind of realize especially going through a percussion degree, how much you do, and then you kind of breeze over it, and then you go back to it later in the professional world, and you're like, oh, this was actually fun, you know. It wasn't just part of it, you know.
I mean, every teacher and every kind of parent talk you have, when you grow up, you know, you're gonna appreciate this more, and that is a very true statement. Like my percussion professor David Steinquist was, you know, I was so rudimental and rigid marching band wise. And he goes, man, you got to flow and you got to, you know, do this when you play concert snare and even keyboards, you know, have a little bit more flow. And then what do you know, I'm not going to go how far back, but that far back, but that long ago, now the activity is all about flow, you know, even the marching activity is about how to flow. And I'm like, man, I should have really took to heart more of what my professor was saying.
I mean, my professor preached that as well, Lonnie Benoit, because he was, I mean, but you know, Dean at UNLV did as well in a different form of more free rebound and stuff like that, which was an interesting concept. But what I found out was that it was implemented into our controlled rebound approach, which was very, very interesting. And, kind of made me kind of dissect it a little bit more, but I do notice that more people are getting away from the stiff, like kind of drive into the drum mentality, school of technique. And they're going towards a nice relaxation at the point of contact, you know, that Father Rennick says, and you know, it's, you know, it's all that great stuff. That's honestly better for health too, you know.
Totally.
It's in my opinion, it's better to watch, you know, visually, because there is I don't know if you agree or not, but there is a significant visual aspect to a drumline, as opposed to just, you know, just the musical side of it. I mean, I always kind of think that it's more of like a 75-25 split of 75%, you know, drumming and 25% visual. Of like, there's a certain thing where you watch these drum corps groups that kind of have this like sway to them, right? When they're marking time, this like this overall just kind of relaxed in syncness of the entire body, and really that kind of, I don't know, it's that visual aspect for me that also adds to great drum lines like Vanguard, right? If you look at Vanguard, they're in sync in not only just the hands but in everything. It seems like same wavelength too. It's a little bit too deep of a level maybe to think about it, but
yeah, you know, that again, I say it a lot, the natural progression of instructors in front of those kids really understand you know, the tuning. Most of them understand tuning. I won't say all of them. but also the flow and also quality of sand and how to use touch and dynamics more frequently in the activity. And I think that's helped out the activity a lot. And also, like you said, it's healthier for those kids. Mm-hmm. You know, again, they're not only getting and enjoying the activity that they're in, but it's multifaceted where, man, I can take that technique and play concert snare drum.
Exactly. You
know, yeah. Take that approach. Now I like you said, like Paul Rennick, man, he has a great approach to the drum. And does that snare line look uniform? People can agree or disagree.
Okay, but, I see, yeah.
But when you're in front of them, their quality of sound and their approach to the drum is bar none the best. And that's why he's Paul Rennick.
Yeah.
And same with Sandy Rennick. I mean, and that's a testament to their past students, and they hire them as staff members. Because I've not heard, you know, a front ensemble play with that kind of sound quality. I mean, there's one other group, and that's the Cavaliers.
Right.
Front ensemble. Those two are bar none, in my opinion, the best in the business.
Hey, you've probably noticed there's a new logo, a new Rudimental Podcast logo. Yes, there is. New aspects of the podcast and things getting better would not be possible without your support of listening and through a support link in the description below for just 99 cents a month. Yes, for just $1 a month, you can support the podcast directly. It goes to things like a new logo, like video graphics, like audio equipment, video equipment. You get the gist of it. If you're interested, click that link in the description below. It's just $1 a month, like I said before. Also, if you could subscribe, rate, and review on any platform you're listening on, whether it be Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever, it is greatly appreciated. Back to the episode.
And that's for drum corps. Indoor, there are a couple of groups indoor-wise. That's a story for another time.
Yeah, you know? Well, I mean, but that quality of sound too, man, that is something that is maybe not, I talked about this a little bit in a previous episode, but maybe it's not instructed enough, like knowledge of sound, especially in the high school realm where, like, you have, like, let's say somebody has a great group and they're self-sufficient, and you got hardworking kids, they show up for rehearsal, they work hard, but they're on autopilot. They're not thinking about sound. They're not thinking about quality sound, how to get a quality sound, understanding that what you're doing, what I've taught you for all these years in your hands is all to achieve a quality of sound. I don't think that's discussed enough. I don't think that's instructed enough.
It's not. Actually, with my students, I have a very specific way I teach, and it's about quality sound. I actually call it the Bruce Lee way of drumming.
I like that.
Where it's about velocity first. So you know how Bruce Lee has the wooden board, and he has the finger here, and he goes, how hard can you punch just from here without moving your arm? And then you do that.
Yeah.
That's the way I teach my kids how to approach the same velocity. And actually, at first I only teach two heights. I teach piano, and then I teach fortissimo.
Okay.
I try not to go with, hey, this is 3 inches, 6 inches, so on and so forth. I'd say, hey, let's just work on loud is usually fairly easy, but playing soft at a loud volume is hard. So I really just work on, you know, facilitating, you know, dexterity in those two realms.
Yeah.
And then we'll work in the middle part. Yeah. So my kid's always funny. It's like, who's Bruce Lee? I'm like, oh my gosh.
No, dude, get out of here. Yeah. I quit. Like,
yeah. Yeah. when you start referencing old, you know, older or classic actors or movies, it, yeah. and they're like, huh?
I'm like, yeah, oh, dude. Man. And for me, it's like, I'm a big sports fan, so like, I'm referencing like all these athletes that are incredible, you know, like, you know, everybody knows Michael Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, you know, but I'm like, you know, like, you know, like Gary Payton, right? And they're like, who? No, I don't, who are you talking about? I'm like,
no. I know Patrick Seattle, Mahomes.
Yeah, exactly. I know Lamar Jackson. He's on the cover of Madden, so. Titans had a good squad this year. I don't know if you're a football fan or not, but
you know what? I am more of a hockey fan. Enjoy the Titans, and I like seeing what's happening, you know, to season to season. I'm glad they have Derrick Henry, you know,
dude.
that guy. But I was watching the other day, Kansas City, right? And their receiver, running back, whatever, they quoted a stat of how fast he runs.
Oh, Tyreek Hill, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like 20.6 miles per hour.
Unreal.
I'm like, I can't even imagine how that's humanly possible.
And it looks easy for him, too.
Yeah, and right out of the gate, from zero to like whatever, yeah. It's just like, he's gone. He's like gone. A flash. It's like...
Dude, but I like comparing athletes, you know, well, I like drawing inspiration from athletes in general, but like that is just being truly good, a master at something, you know, like to be that good at a professional sport amongst, because like all these guys are freaks, right? All these guys are freaks and you're a freak amongst freaks. And I think it's so cool. I mean, like, I mean, yesterday was the anniversary of Kobe passing away, and like I drew so much inspiration from that guy. I really did. That Mamba mentality thing, whether you like it or not, it's very useful, especially when you're developing a craft. Like you're sitting behind this drum kit for hours and hours and you feel like you're getting nowhere. It's like that extra kind of juice, you know?
Yeah, I have to tell my kids that all the time. It's like, hey, just because you're playing the green scales or you're playing eight on a hand or something, the monotony is all in your head.
Yeah.
I said, as a 40 and something year old man, I still warm up with that.
Yeah.
And I tell them, if they're going to keep doing this activity or doing something else, you're never going to deviate from playing that type of exercise.
Right.
You know, you'll get a variation of it, but you have to come away with, you know, playing more metronomically in time, or you know, how does it feel for you, or am I using the right enough fingers, am I using enough wrist turn, you know, am I using too much of something, you know. I always tell them, it's like, man, you gotta do this and do that. And I always get inspiration, speaking about sports, I get inspiration from a lot of sports movies.
Yeah.
In my program, I am that guy that gives the talk to all the kids before a show.
Coach Hainer, let's go.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. You know, I'm that guy. Or actually watching the Michael Jordan and the Bulls documentary.
Oh,
stuff.
Man. The Last Dance. Incredible.
It is so good.
Yeah.
So good. You don't even have to be a sports fan to go, man, that's inspirational.
I've had several non-sports fans watch that documentary. Because so it's that good, you know.
Yeah, seeing Michael Jordan, seeing how Scottie Pippen like reacts to certain things, and then
yeah,
looks at the camera's like, that was BS.
Yeah,
or the story about Dennis Rodman was ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know?
And absurd.
Yeah, but he's that good of an athlete.
Yeah,
he can go do a 4-day bender in Vegas, come back, and then the playoffs,
yeah,
hungover, and still.
Get
job.
Like 25 rebounds, yeah.
Yeah, he's unreal. So ridiculous. But, yeah, I tell my kids all the time, it's like, you know what's hard? It's hard to be good.
Yeah.
And it's even harder to be great.
That's why a lot of people aren't. I mean, in a lot of things, right? And I'm reading this book by David Goggins, who is that ex-Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
Can't Hurt Me. the really good book. This book makes me want to run through a brick wall. So there's one of those. It's one of those things of like, you read about him talking about the path of least resistance versus the path of most resistance, which is what he kind of puts himself through, right? He goes a little extreme with it, right? I mean, he's running like 20 miles a day, and you know, wants to put himself through torture basically so the rest of life seems easier. But I feel like a lot of people underestimate what it takes to be good at drums and percussion. I feel especially percussion, right? I mean, going through and learning all these instruments and being proficient at them, and to where there's a point where like you get a call and you can say yes to anything. Like, hey, I got a timpani gig, you want to do it? Yes. Got a drum set gig, you want to do it? Yes. I got a vibraphone gig, you want to do it? Yes. That takes a lot. That's why you have to draw inspiration. You can't do it by yourself. You really can't.
No, you can't. You can't. Like, you know, I honed in as much as the marching arts as I could as a student. And then as an adult and being an educator, I still learn. I'm lucky that I have people that are artists of innovative that I can ask. Like, I can ask Paul Rennick.
Man, hey, dude, you got so many people at your disposal.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, you know, I even asked Brooks Wackerman, you know.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, how do you get that dexterity in the feet? He goes, practice. I go, that's so not motivating to me, but but you're amazing. And to your listeners, if they've never watched Brooks Wackerman from Event Sevenfold, just use his feet. He can play everything with his feet and match his hands.
Yeah, it's in flams, drags, like it's everything.
Ridiculous.
He and taking over that gig is no small feat either.
No.
Like when he got that gig after the ref, like that is no kudos to him, man, because that is something that they have a dedicated fan base, a huge fan base, and that is that was some big shoes to fill. He's great.
Yeah, I remember the first time meeting him, he was with another stick company, but Event Sevenfold was playing in Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, and for some odd reason, our drum set rep out on the West Coast said, hey, man, he's there for one day. Can you go down and meet him and talk nerdy drumstick stuff?
Absolutely.
And I said, yes. It just so happened. It was like every 3 to 4 years we get a snowpocalypse here.
Yeah.
But it's not snow first. It's rain. Then it turns to ice. Then the blizzard.
Yeah.
And there was like 2-3 inches of ice and then like a foot of snow, which in Nashville, we're not set up for anything like that.
So the whole,
yeah. So the whole city shuts down.
Yeah.
It just so happens there. We had to like leave work early and I had 2 hours to kill before going down there. So I just started driving down there. From being on the road, and then I'm originally from Seattle, like driving in any kind of environmental change or atmosphere, I'm used to doing. So I drove down there, me and our plant supervisor, because he pretty much does all the R&D for all the prototype sticks. So we both
there's a new factory, right?
We expanded the old factory.
Gotcha.
So we're in the exact same place. We just expanded another 3,000 square feet.
Gotcha.
So we drove down there. We met up with him and he goes, you want to get on stage and look at the drum set? And we both said, of course. So we got behind his kit. I didn't sit down because it was so intricate with electronics and acoustic drums and cymbals. I mean, you want to feel small, sit in an arena or stand behind a huge drum set in an arena, you feel like this small. And dude, I was in awe. I didn't know what else to do. I said, man, this is cool.
Yeah, there's nothing else to say at that point. You're
nothing else to say, you yeah. know. And then we talked for about an hour or two about Nerdy Drumsticks and what he was getting and what we could give him and offer him. And he goes, where do I sign up?
Dude, that was a huge signing. It really was.
Man, it was one of the coolest things, you know, because I mean, to your listeners out there, you know, to be an educator is one thing. And there's a lot of cool things as an educator you get to see from your students and all that stuff. But the one thing that kind of like what you were talking about earlier about what parents and kids as a student in high school or in middle school don't realize, it's like, you don't have to become a band director. You don't have to become, you know, there isn't like a stereotypical, this is what you should do if you want to be a musician, like an orchestral gig or whatever. There's so many options, especially now, like, you know, even being a career, like being a part of the Marine Journal Bugle Corps or being a part of the Army Band.
Yeah, or, the military route's incredible. Yeah. The
military route is ridiculous. And if you do the marching band and drum corps thing, I have friends in both of those organizations, and they like, yeah, I went through Marine basic training and drum corps was harder.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, wow. And now he's in charge of the Marine. And now he's in charge of the Marine Drum and Bugle Corps percussion section.
Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, and he's made it. He's a lifer, you know.
Yeah.
Or you go on the other side and be in the music industry side, like myself. There's so many other facets, you know. And I tell my kids that all the time.
Yeah.
And their parents are like, really? Really, there's a career in this? And I was like, yeah.
And the industry is kind of the one that not a lot of people know about, right?
Exactly.
Myself included, until I was getting into, you know, when I signed with IP, I had no idea how an endorsement worked, right? You don't know how that kind of operates until you get one and you're like, okay, this is how it is, right? This is what a contract looks like. This is an agreement for the certain amount of time that you're going to exclusively use these products. And, you know, I guess my question would be is, I have actually interviewed for an industry job before. I'll tell you more about it in a bit. Maybe off camera, but mostly because it's more embarrassing on my side. But I interviewed for a job like that, and knowing in the back of my mind, I'm like, I don't really know much about the industry at all, because you're so dug into the educational side of it, whether being teacher or a student, and also the playing side of it, whether you're a full-time player or, you know, a freelancer along with being an educator like myself. There is very little, I guess, knowledge, because I guess people don't really ask, right? Like, you don't call, like, I'm not going to call you and be like, hey man, I would love to place an order. Also, what's it like being, you know, I guess I could do that, which is why I kind of asked you on, but, I guess my question would be, is what are some challenges that come with being an artist rep? Because, I know that it's also probably one of the coolest jobs in the world. You get to talk to some really great educators and performers, players and so forth. But like, what are some challenges that come with that title for a major percussion mallet company?
You know, one of the things I see on a daily basis when it comes to people that want to get an endorsement, first, the perception of actually having an endorsement is misconstrued.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because they see, like, going back to the athletes part, being a pro, you know, they see Michael Jordan with Nike, and man, he gets paid and he gets free stuff and, you know, like whatever. And, or like in NASCAR where you see every, you know, car out there on the track with all these sponsorship, you know, logos. Golfer.
I think golfers is a good example.
Same with golfers. The misconception is you're applying for an endorsement, but you don't realize how exclusive that endorsement is to that particular company. And they think it's free. I hate to say this because, you know, I don't want to knock every educator out there, but not every educator that wants to apply for an endorsement is really looking for an endorsement for themselves. They're actually looking for a sponsorship for their high school
group. Their program. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is not what we do. But unfortunately on our website, our perception is, oh man, they sponsor this high school, that high school, this drum corps, this indoor group. And you know, all these, but that's how we promote the brand. You know,
right. I mean, you can't, it's kind of like, I don't know. It does go back to sports, right? I mean, like, or it goes back to leagues. Leagues are, you know, we are fondly used in WGI, DCI, you know, Texas All-State competition, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just the misconception. And what I would say to your audience is, before you actually try to apply, you should just Google how to get an endorsement or what endorsements entail, because there's plenty of literature out there to read prior to doing that.
A couple of YouTube videos as well. I believe some artists have done that.
For sure. And it's not a knock on anybody that's trying to apply. It's just that, like you said, they don't know the little nuances and details of how to approach it. So they just jump in with both feet and just go for it.
Yeah.
Because what's the worst that they can say? And that's kind of the generation we're in right now. What's the worst they can say is no. You know, where if I didn't work here and I still did what I did as an educator and as a performer, I still wouldn't even think I was good enough to even apply. You know? Again, I'm part of it.
I mean, I was very fortunate in the position I was in to be connected with IP, and still to this day, it's like imposter syndrome, right? You're just, I don't deserve this, right? But you know, it's very much so like what you're saying. You know, you never think, a lot of people are in both, it's both camps, right? Like you have a lot of people that are like, you know, maybe I do deserve one. You have the other people that are like, man, I don't know if I deserve this at all. Am I doing enough? Like, am I good enough? You know?
Yeah. And that's another stipulation is like, you know, you may have this great group of kids and they may be very successful at a local level, but you almost have to see it again. It's because they don't understand our industry. They just see, hey man, I'm successful. My kids are successful. Maybe I'm deserving of this, where it's not only local, but then you got to expand to regional. And after regional, is your group and are you doing anything to give yourself exposure so that marketing and promotional aspect of the company sees that and thinks that you're a commodity first? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like building your resume, you know, building a work resume. You know, are you qualified enough to get that job? You know, it's the same way here. And that's part of my job. You know, before the pandemic, we've kind of put a pause on really signing new artists, especially in nationally. Is are you able to do or do those types of things? Now, if you just fresh out of college and you just got this band director gig, you know, hone in that craft before all that. And this is not necessarily a negative to anybody that maybe listening or maybe even applied in the last year or two. Yeah. It's more like, hey, this is advice.
Yeah.
You know, this is advice.
How do I approach it? I mean, like,
how to approach it.
That face-to-face, when we get back to normal, I mean, that face-to-face interaction too does help, I believe.
Really?
I mean, it helped me. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. And even more advice is, how do you want a relationship with a company? You know, our company is really, really takes to heart relationships with the artist. And that's not only a company kind of mantra. That's just the type of person I am.
Yeah.
Even when you see any of the YouTube videos I've done for the company, or even the social media posts I've done, what you see is kind of what you get from me. It's
I can speak for that. I mean, look, he's doing my podcast, people. I mean, like, he didn't have to do this. He's at work and he didn't have to do this. So, you know,
that this is kind of the part of the gig, you know. Yeah. I was kind of the way we started the whole, it was my idea to do like those Road to PASIC videos.
Yeah, I like those.
And that's actually even part of my gig. Well, in the normal times, that was part of my gig. I would spend about 20, 30 minutes on YouTube watching personalities, YouTubers, and see how they approached stuff.
It's tough, man. It really is.
It is really hard. You know, and the funny thing is I didn't watch anything in the music industry.
Yeah, you got to watch like, you got to watch like influencers or like fitness people or like there's some lifestyle vloggers who or YouTubers that like make like this YouTuber is a men's lifestyle YouTube guy. Then there's a guy who's like a minimalist and he's like talking about minimalism and you're like, but it's hard to talk in front of the camera like that and to seem personable, you know.
It is really tough. I actually got into CrossFit because I was watching CrossFit videos and their daily diets and regimes, workout regimes. I was watching home improvement YouTubers.
Yeah, I like those. Modern Builds is a good one.
Modern Builds. And then other athletes. Just it really honed in how sincere they were. And then I would watch something like a guy named David So. He's a comedian and singer, and like I'd watch him and how he did his daily vlogs. And, it was funny. When I first brought up to the powers that be here, hey, we should do this, and they were like, well, who's gonna do it? And they all pointed the finger at me because they just said I had that kind of charisma and
I agree
personality. Yeah. And where I could relate to the younger generation, but also the older generation that might actually tune into YouTube would go, hey man, he actually knows what he's talking about, even though he's got tattoos and like hipster glasses. You know, they would be like, hey,
this young man knows his sticks and mallets.
Yeah. So, and after the first few videos, oh man, I mean, back then we were just really, really swamped. And on command, like Eric Johnson would be like, all right, what's your bit today? Like, how are you going to be funny today? I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm on SNL. Like,
yeah.
Like on cue, you got to be funny. Yeah. And then it's like, and I'm not even in the mood. If you could see some of the outtakes.
Dude, I'd love to.
of the videos. I cuss more than a sailor. And also like just to hear me like mumble and stumble and stutter through all of the stuff. Like, cause I'd actually have my iPad with all the stuff I needed to cover, but then it was probably 20, 30 takes of me going like, how can I put this in my own words to make it all flow together?
Yeah. It's kind of like, well, for podcasting, I watched some of the best podcasts and most popular podcasts in the world are comedians podcasts.
Yeah.
And you don't realize how good they are until you do one, and how, you know, especially Rogan, right? Rogan drives a conversation like no other. Like, and he's intelligent and he's well spoken because he's a stand-up comedian. You have to be for that. But you know, you look at other comedians like Tom Segura and stuff like that. Like, they are, I cannot believe the level of quality they have behind their podcast. And until I did one, and learning how to drive a conversation is not easy. I'm telling you right now, like, people probably do one or two episodes of a new podcast idea they have, and they're like, yikes, because that's how I was. And so it's, yeah, it's kudos to them, man.
Yeah. Being a podcaster, being in the front office, it was really hard to listen to podcasts.
Mm.
But being in the car, I was more of an audiobook kind of guy.
Yep.
I'm a very true crime kind of person. So
yeah,
listening to true crime. But then having the opportunity to work in the back, man, I am just Spotifying a lot of podcasters, and Rogan was one of them. And I don't know why I've never listened to him prior to this, but man, the charisma that guy has, and how you can hear all of his inflections and dynamics, you know, you can almost see how his face too,
yep,
how he does it. And he's remarkable, man.
Yeah. It's one of my biggest inspirations for this thing. I mean, I don't know where this is going to go, like, obviously, but because, you know, we're in a very niche market and very niche community, but, you know, I've gotten some good response from it, and, you know, hopefully it gets to a point where, you know, it's an influence on some people. And I can only try to make it better. Having great guests on like yourself is one way to do it. For one thing, I do thank you for coming on, because you didn't have to. You're in the middle of a work week, so I do appreciate it.
No, it's funny. We actually have a potential guy, I can't say who, coming in today, and he has been around the block.
I'm excited.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Who this is?
Because I mean, the whole industry, you know, music in general has suffered amongst the rest of the world.
Yep.
But I mean, companies like ours, you know, all we can do is hope that we can see the next day, and hope like we can see the light at the end of the rainbow, you know, at the end of the tunnel here, because a lot of companies are not able to survive this, you know. And
yeah,
and
very much so.
A lot of people that have worked in the industry have been laid off or fired, you know, cutbacks. And, you know, I'm definitely lucky that I'm able to stick around here and keep doing what I'm doing. But it's hard. And I know it's hard on everybody, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. We as artists appreciate you and everything as that IP does, to help us. And you're great to talk to. That's one of the reasons why you're so good at what you do, and you contribute greatly to IP's products and their overall reputation, which is a good one. So like I said, can't thank you enough for coming on. This is incredible. I know you got to go here soon, but because you got real stuff to do. But
I have like 45 minutes to do some real things, and then that potential guy comes in then.
Yeah.
And then I actually have to leave in a couple hours, because I've had a couple months ago had really bad kidney stones where they had to surgically remove them.
Man.
And so they were doing some tests on my kidneys and all that stuff. And yeah, my urologist said, hey, can you come in Wednesday? And I was like, this was on Monday. And I said, this sounds serious. He goes, well, we'll just have a talk. I go, that's not a yes or no.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm worried.
Yeah.
So
I hope it's all right, man. I really do.
You know, I tell everybody this. I may look younger than I actually am on the outside, but on the inside, I'm like 115 years old. I feel that way anyways. Yeah. But man, I really appreciate the opportunity. I hope I covered as much as, you know, as you wanted to. I know we hit just scratch the surface on everything, but to let your listeners know, hey man, our phone line here is always open. Like, you will actually talk to somebody. There's no automated, like, hey, press number 1, 2, 3, yep, or whatever. Like, you actually send an email to a website, you will get a response. Especially if it's artist relations oriented or product relations oriented, usually those come direct to me. So the one stipulation that there too is, like, people are afraid to kind of ask. Mm. Don't be afraid to ask, yeah, especially from us anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. You can get all your Innovative Percussion products at major dealers. You can go to innovativepercussion.com for all the information on the products, as well as apparel and some education stuff and pictures. And it's really great. So thanks, man, again, for coming on. You can follow me at Hartwell Drums on Instagram and Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can go to www.hartwelldrums.com for all the podcast updates and my updates. Shout out to Grant Furness for the new logo design. I love it. It's very clean. It's very simple. And I'm very much looking forward to utilizing that here in the near future. So thank you guys for listening. That's it for this one. We'll see you next time.